Let me try to get to the point in my own. Let me try to retrace the steps of how we get onto this thing of language and its relationship and what it means. When Hercules overcame Graion, the keeper of the alphabet, what and how that process started in terms of the scriptures. Paul talked a great deal in 1 Corinthians about that everything that happened in the Old Testament happened for an example to us. And then he goes on and says, and there is no temptation that has overtaken you that isn't common to all, etc., etc. Well, let me tell you exactly what he says. There hath no temptation. It says, wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall. Well, let me go back up. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents, neither murmur, as some of them also murmur and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happen unto them for examples or types, metaphors, analogies, pictures, schematics. And they are written for our admonition, upon whom the end of the world has come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Now, the reason that we don't understand that scripture, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed unless he fall, and all the other, be not high-minded but fear, the reason we don't understand those scriptures is because that's all we do. Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed. Take heed means pay attention. You're either taking a stand or trying to claw your way up to a place where you can take a stand. If by the grace of God there's a moment in time, a microsecond, a millisecond, a nanosecond in time where you don't have the capacity to take a stand, you call it spiritual to claw your way up to the place where you can take a stand. Without taking a stand, the human race can't exist. Without taking a stand, you're dead. You understand me? I don't have to delineate all the places where you take stands, do I? The sickest part of the stand-taking is the ideas of what you do in your mind with regard to how you're planning to take a stand tomorrow. You've got a little plan in your head that if it works, then you will be all right, then you will take a stand. You've got some structured activity within that evil one that defines the place or the time or the activity that you'll be involved with that will cause you to have a standing. Am I communicating? Take heed. Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Now what does all that have to do with language? Well, I'm about to tell you. There hath no temptation or testing taken you, but such as is common to all men. I wished you could hear yourselves sometimes, the way that the spiritual mind or the Father would hear you. It's like the Agag story. What is this bleating of sheep that I hear in my ears? You know, if you've wiped out every man, woman, and child, everything, if you've slain Agag and hewn him to pieces, and you've slain all the stuff, then what is this bleating I hear in my ears? There hath no temptation taken you, but is such as is common to all men. God is faithful, will not suffer you or allow you to be tempted above that you are able. Every time that you get in a state where you believe you're in limbo, you are in that state because you're looking to someone else other than the Father for life or sustenance. Now, but he will with the temptation also make a way to escape that you may be able to bear it. If I didn't know that was true, I'd have quit this game a long time ago.
Could you repeat that?
Wherefore let him that thinketh he stand take heed, unlest he fall. There hath no temptation or testing taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted above that you are able, but with this temptation also make a way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. And notice it's God that makes the way of escape, not you. Now, we always read that in your mind language again. You'll read that by saying, aha, that means I'm supposed to hit the road. There's an escape that I've thought up.
I'll find it.
I need to go somewhere. Remember, the predicate for everything in the spiritual life is abiding in the condition, in the calling wherein you're called. In that abiding, you'll be in a position which violates everything, every common sense thought that you have. Every idol that you have. To abide will either cause one of two things. You'll either, to hear the need for abiding, you will either rationalize not abiding, or your idols will fall. You got that? Okay, now. Because of all that, now it says, wherefore, my beloved, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. I speak as to wise men, judge or consider what I say. Flee from idolatry. Now, in Colossians, it says that covetousness is idolatry. Anytime you want more than you have at this instant, it is by definition idolatry. Above all things, my brethren, flee idolatry. Covetousness is idolatry. Now, what my mind did is to say, well, how in the hell can there ever be a state of being in which there is no idolatry, because you're confronted with the constant stimuli. You must be able to, I mean, everything around us forces us into idolatry.
The organism is designed.
Yeah. So then what I saw is that all idolatry is based on the naming of names. You couldn't name the name, you couldn't be in a state of thinking about tomorrow or in the next instant or something you wanted. If you couldn't name it, you couldn't claim it. You couldn't rate it. You couldn't. If you couldn't name it, you'd be in a state. You'd be content in whatsoever state you found yourself. So that's how I got into all this stuff about language. Then I started thinking about names, and that's what we've been doing thus far. You understand? Now let's talk about, we got names, now let's talk about definitions.
Puerto Rico is in the
got the whole world. In his thoughts, got the whole world.
Paul said that to compare is unwise. Remember that, 2 Corinthians?
No.
You don't want to compare. It says, he who compares is unwise. And we've talked a lot about the only reason that you like the darkness more than the light is because it's in that darkness that you can compare. In the shade, in the relative twilight, you can compare. In comparison, you can elevate yourself. There's always someone worse than you.
In summary.
And so therefore you can always have evidence that you can take a stand. You can always silently judge someone else down, or in this arena now, it's no longer silent. That's the only difference that you have between any other group of people. Now you can openly judge them down. But you think you're so reasonable, so spiritual when you're judging down. So mature. But the only reason that you judge down is because that you like the darkness more than the light. So therefore, an evidence that you like the darkness more than you like the light is the need to define. Because to define causes two things. It causes differentiation and classification. Those two things happen in definition. You understand?
Yeah.
So you can define and classify, and our whole language is structured to define and to classify. To differentiate, I mean, and to classify. I can prove that God is in all and in all, because I have a language that's structured to differentiate and to classify. So the language itself is the greatest enemy there is of the unity that the scriptures say God is all and in all, that we are one. The prayer of the Son is that they may be one, even as we are one, you and me, I and them and me, etc., etc., etc. You understand? So the need for name, and then the defining of the name, is to differentiate, to classify, so that the Antichrist can see that there is a place where he can take a stand. You can wipe out all philosophy, all science, all religion, all everything. That is the singular thing that's going on. The Antichrist has to have names and definitions so that he can prove to himself by that agrimental pretense that he's better than somebody. Do you understand that?
Yeah. I mean, just like in the
failure. We need somebody here to argue with.
I don't want to argue with you. You said you understand this. Is this, you want to use the computer? computer analogy. Talk
first.
The mind. With that analogy, what this means is that we've created a language that we program into the computer and the operating program or whatever it is that makes computers work. But the language
has one goal.
Each element of that language by itself and each combination of those elements of that language denies, disallows, does not recognize the mystery.
You missed it.
Completion.
All of it all. It's
finished. At the live linear time. So that everything that's programmed in here with which this thing works is against the truth.
Okay.
Well, no wonder it's so fucking hard to understand.
It's going to be programmed.
Yeah. We have a new program.
Didn't you notice?
The new program is called The Cross.
Yeah. Well, your history. Not
your history.
It's your
history. Your chump.
So that combined with what you said the other night, which is nothing spiritual, nothing we've experienced through our senses compares to the spiritual. We cannot see, hear, taste the spiritual based on what we have seen, heard, tasted. Those two things together make it impossible. For man, it's impossible.
Nor ear heard, nor entered into the heart of man, that which God hath prepared for them that wait on him. I mean, you know, I could go down the room, or around the room, or crisscross the room.
Can't say going down.
Can limbo across.
Yeah. Because I know each of you well enough to be able to pick on you. I mean, you obviously know that.
Pick on somebody new.
Pick the nose.
Because, can you admit the possibility that your idolatry is simply a learned phenomena that's based on names and has no foundation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
now, in regard to this thing about definitions, do you understand that a definition, that the name and the definition are substitutes for each other? Do you understand that?
Evil twins.
They're substitutes one for another. Now some of this stuff sounds so obvious that you never think about it, but when you'll see its tie-in here in a minute, hopefully. Now, there are different kinds of definitions. There have to be, in order that society can work, the first called physical. And the physical definition names the parts and their relation one to another. Okay? This is just standard English stuff. This isn't anything mysterious. It's just simply what you learn in English, if you take English. Another definition, a type of definition, is genetic. And that states the process of production. You understand, like, if we're talking about defining a book, we have to have a physical definition, a genetic definition, an analytic definition, a descriptive definition, and you understand that?
What's the genetic definition? I don't understand what you mean by genetic.
The genetic definition says how this is made.
Where it came from?
Yeah, how you make it.
Our process.
How you process.
It's used for.
Yeah. Okay, a physical definition names the parts of this and its relationship to one to another. This isn't mysterious. This is simply standard English.
Yeah,
it's what you learn in college, if you take college English course. I mean, you go to any English style, what's Funk's style book or whatever it is? Elements of Style. I mean, this is in there, right here. All names, all definitions have to Everything named has to have these definitions.
Yep.
Physical, genetic, analytic. The analytic definition states its component parts.
Genetic
states the process of production, how you make
it. How it's got to be here, how it exists.
Genetic means how it came into being.
Yeah, okay.
Physical and
the other one.
Okay. The other name, and it's good, we got physical, genetic, analytic, and descriptive. Descriptive names a sufficient number of features about it to make it recognizable from other objects.
Roughly, yeah. Separate with gold letters.
Okay.
And a rhythm.
The final one is the final definition that everything has to have, that your mind will demand that it has, is something called teleological. Not theological, but T-E-L, teleological. T-E-L-E-O-L-O-G-I-C-L.
Teleological.
Teleological is a lot of things, but it's teleologic. It names the function or why it has an existence.
What does it do?
Its end result.
What does it do?
But it's also a form of logic or a belief system that says that all things have a end use.
Ah, that's
but it's a technical term that means how it's used. What's its function? What's its purpose? You understand? I mean, we're in first grade here.
Yeah.
This is, all definitions have to fall either in one of these areas. Physical, genetic, analytic, descriptive, and teleological, or teleological. How do you say it?
Teleological.
Okay, now. Now we're going to leave standard stuff and see if we can make a leap of faith for a moment. Can you understand or can you accept the possibility that all definitions of something that define its purpose or its use or its function are in truth theological?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it would be its use in the temple.
Okay? You got that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
how is theological?
Because by definition, God stuff is, why in the hell are we here? What are we doing here? And what do we do while we're here? And what is my relationship to others? So that's by definition teleological, but it's also by definition theological.
From our viewpoint. There's a unified system at the cause is God.
Okay, now, so what we are actually doing when we have Bible study is we're looking at everything in the universe from the viewpoint of God. Therefore, we're redefining in our mind names. It's not that we're discarding names, and therefore now we're going to sit around as bumps in a log and go, ugh, like
Zoof.
No, you can't even go Zoof. You can't have any recognizable sound. It's that we are somehow, by the renewing of our mind, making them a part and parcel of the study of the desired one, Jesus Christ himself. That there is no thing that doesn't, we will look at everything without apology. And we'll have its physical definition, its genetic definition, its analytical definition, its descriptive definition, and its theological definition. So by the use of words, which the Antichrist has been given to cause separation, we now can transform by seeing through to see unity as all and in all.
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, we have defeated the evil one.
That's what it means to bring into captivity
every thought. You bring into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Now hear me, you'll never hear a more important concept than what I'm talking about right now, because it's the essence of your mind.
We're changing English to Hebrews.
No, this is great.
You understand me?
Yeah, it's like language, and it's very, you know, when you're talking about everything being small parts, you can have, okay, I'm alive in this part, even though your whole life's dead.
Okay, what we are doing...
It's
it's recognizing the fact that the way this meat works is thoughts. Thoughts are words. I mean, it's accepting that reality that words are necessary.
Okay, listen to me. It's from the standpoint of what you have learned and seen thus far. We've had 8 tapes, 8 nights on language, on the 10th labor of Hercules. If we stopped after last week, if you were really theologically and intellectually honest, you couldn't even exist without being and recognizing yourself as a total hypocrite every second.
Oh yeah.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now what I'm telling you, now we are going to lay our hands on the whole alphabet and all the language and all definitions and all sentences. We're going to lay our hands on them and take dominion over it. We're going to touch it and take dominion over it. We are going to, as Harry said, redeem the alphabet. We're going to take back the alphabet from Grayon, the monster, the evil one. And we are going to redeem it now so that we can use this world, this thing in the world, but not abuse it. Never give it breath any longer. Now we're going to see that language by the redemption of it proves that God is all and in all, proves that we are one with Him, proves that there is no separation. And I'm gonna. If you can hear what I'm gonna say in a minute, you're gonna get your mind blown.
What you're saying is using but not abusing.
Not giving it breath. Not giving it importance. See it only as an instrument that you can bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. A little bit of understanding.
Italians here? Puerto Rican. Any female Italian?
Puerto Rican's trying to hide.
I'm an Italian girl.
I got some Irish and Dutch here.
We need an Italian.
That just came up. I wouldn't have the guts to say that in Jersey.
Oh, God.
This used to be our Italian girl.
Oh, I'm not putting that on. Look at that thing.
Doesn't matter.
You got a magic shirt.
Oh, I love this stuff. Is this fit the tail of the Harry? Really?
Yeah, it is.
Can you see Harry? I can't hear.
What are you doing?
Trying to break the acceptance.
You stuck your eyeballs to the back of your head.
Give him the rubber on Harry.
Is this the initiation?
Yeah. Okay, this is where we all piss on
game.
You. Very nice.
Okay, now you can be grand high and hooky from the lodge. All raccoons rise.
Mr. Grand
Poobah. I'm telling you, Norton, we're in.
They want just stand there.
Only ask for a guinea pig. Harry said, "Where is your Italian girl?"
Okay, now I want us to do something. Did you all of you see what I just did with the item I did it with?
Yes, so, I saw. Mm-hmm.
Okay. For those of you who didn't see, don't participate in this.
Okay.
Okay, I want Harry. Harry's object is to find the object that I did something with.
Uh-huh.
The object that's in my mind. Now, the only way, he's blindfolded. He can't see. The only way that he can find it is by either me speaking or a group of us giving him directions to find it. Okay? And the only thing we can do is just say, we can't use language for this purpose. We can only say, with the exception that we can say, nearer, near, or far. Nearer or farther. Okay? So Harry's got to start moving.
Okay, don't let me trip him.
Okay, just go real slow. No, farther.
Huh?
No, we'll let's change it. We'll make it. We can make it right, left, straight ahead.
Well, what's he trying to?
Shut up! You didn't see, so you can't participate. You don't know the language.
Oh, okay.
Got it.
So we're gonna give you feedback.
I did.
Okay. Go
little bit to your right, just a little bit. Okay, now go straight. Slow, slow, straight, straight, straight.
Turn a little
bit to your right. Now back to your left. Straight, 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 straight. Keep going. Straight. Now go a little bit to your left, just a little bit. Okay, straight, 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 straight. Now reach out your left hand. Now put it down slowly and straight. I mean down directly below your hand. Keep going. Keep going, keep going, keep going. Ha! That's it. Now you can take the blindfold off.
Who was it?
We come back in the room. Now, what you do with names and the structure of names in a sentence is exactly what we did with Harry just now. The person that you're communicating with is blindfolded, and you direct his attention to the object that you have in your mind by gimmicks of language.
I had a line one time that I hadn't used yet, but where communication is continuous turning.
Okay.
Always turning.
You exclude or include its name from other names. And that's essentially what we did by saying right, left, straight. So that eventually, the object that I had in my mind, your attention and your capture of it was directed by that process. You've got to see that a sentence is no other thing. It's exactly the same thing. A sentence is a roadmap for the blind.
And it was great relief on my part when the transaction was complete.
Yeah. You understand that?
Sentence
Right. A sentence is a structure of pretenses put together so that you can direct another's attention to your pretense.
Again, agreement on the pretense.
You hear me, this is so basic.
Oh no,
you get results on pretense.
Okay, one play, this is all you do when you communicate, whether it's by speaking or writing, is you play this game.
And it's even worse than that because those of us who finish people's sentences and already assume what the other person is going to say and just by trying to totally appropriate it.
Okay, now, what I just did to her was I stepped on, in disc jockey terms, I stepped on her sentence. The reason I did was to give an example. I stepped on her sentence because I denigrated her.
I really love that stuff.
in radio, when you are playing a commercial and you start the song too quick, really pisses off the sponsors. In fact, salespeople hate it because they have to run the spot again. So if you're trying to talk to somebody, you know, I waited too long. I was going to do it in the middle of it. And they step on your commercial. Because that really, in truth, all sentences are just commercials.
Wow. No, it's worse if you're stepping on someone's
If you step on there, they get really mad. Or if you discount it, they get really upset. That's like running. Right, that's like what Louis does. Louis does it all the time.
Yeah.
He says, oh, what you mean is this. I've spent 16 years of my life studying how to communicate, and this dork comes up and says, oh no, what you mean is this. You understand me? He stepped in my commercial. Now more than that, every sentence is sorcery. Because you've taken these definitions that we've just talked about, these names, placed them in a cauldron with the right mixture in order to get the desired result.
Yeah.
Now, even worse, every sentence is the Lord's Prayer in reverse.
Yep.
Right, and therefore you then you are.
I don't have this. I'm going to say something, then I'll have it.
And the purpose of my sentence is to get you to say amen to my prayer.
And the purpose of the sentence is to elevate you.
Well, after this, I'm not talking anymore.
Me either.
We're going out on the
sentences are simply maps of names that each one of us create for another in order that they may reach the goal of our desired thought.
What?
It's therefore tautological that every sentence that you speak is manipulative by definition.
I just thought of something in the language which, or that set of language which is held, even people that hate it, as most difficult and most valuable is that because it produces the most different results all in the same box of words.
Mm-hmm. Say that again.
I don't get that.
The reason songs are valuable or poetry is valuable or certain essays are valuable is because they have all these different meanings and things that come out and they're different each time you read them, etc., etc. So that's why it's more valuable than just one throwaway spell.
More new speed.
Oh, yeah.
More new speed.
More gold.
It's a spell that could be repeated for century after century after century, much like him.
Okay, yeah. I mean, please, please consider the implications of this. Okay, so we've established, and I think you would all agree, that by the use of names strung together, one states that the object of thought is like this and unlike that, until through awareness of the right name and its associations, the other person or person thinks of the same thing of which the speaker or writer is thinking. You see that, so that's the intent of all communication. So it's all manipulation.
Damn. Could you use the whole thing to get approval too?
That's all you use it for.
You're on the right track.
When we put so much support in it.
I don't need your help, okay?
It's like we could just tell the interiors if someone doesn't give us the right word.
All that language is the crying of the infant to get attention.
Oh man.
Did you ever, you remember, most of you probably didn't have to diagram sentences.
Oh, yes, we did.
You did?
Oh,
you
ad nauseum.
I loved it.
I did.
Yeah.
I thought it was
cool.
Because
you got
A.
Yeah,
you're
the brain.
Well,
and
Henry,
that
would be a big deal. What do you want to do, Saturday?
Oh, I don't know. Let's
I couldn't play football.
Sentence.
But I can diagram sentences.
Subject, right?
Grammar is simply the teaching of a society the effective use of sorcery.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh. Former grammar teacher.
Ladies and gentlemen, the new Secretary of Education.
Shit. No, I mean, the thing that always came down to in class when we were discussing grammar, how to write, was this. I read a lot, I've written a few things, and this is how you write something, and I told them that. And that was always the fundamental rule. You can always fall back on blah, 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 but it was always, this is what works. Do it like this.
Mm-hmm. All those sweet little old ladies all across North America
are teaching sorcery.
God.
Now, please, 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 I beg of you,
If you don't understand what I'm saying, speak something, or give a sign, or a grunt.
Or a harumph, as Rex would do.
Or fart, even.
No, wait a minute, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. That's the first time you ever called for that. I was on a special occasion.
Well, he knows
that. Celebrate with wine. A lot of people didn't think he could
help. He knows that the poor ass had never rejoiced in the second.
Eric, you and food.
That's true.
Okay, now, you understand.
I'm beginning to see what you're saying.
Huh?
When we went to the break, I started, only way I saw it was that every sentence I was saying was, I want to see more sentences improved than every sentence is ridiculous. And then as I was speaking, it was...
Okay, now, let's go back another step. The only reason that you or this society or all societies have a need to manipulate is because they believe they are separate from the source of life. If you did not believe that you were separate from life itself, then there would be no need for language. Can you understand that?
Mm-hmm.
There would only be ecstasy. You would exist in a state of ecstasy.
It's really just the survival technique that finds all the survival techniques.
Right.
Yeah. That's what language is, survival technique.
Well, it's how man defines civilization. Civilization is an attempt at an appearance of unity based on common idolatry. The basis, the foundation stone for all idolatry is language.
When I was a kid and you heard about the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence, how it was written down, I never could understand that. I thought, all right, so big deal. Some guys wrote some crap on a piece of paper. What's that got to do with me? Because now I was like, murder. I can't. But it's just that, we have this little document, so here's the thing that we can do.
Every society has it. You have to see that.
Yeah.
Every society has this as a basis. Even primitive, even ancient societies have some commonality of naming that provides the foundation for all other idolatry. Now, it's not smart to hear this stuff.
I'm struggling trying to think of, I'm trying to go through, you mean people wouldn't talk to each other. That's what comes up.
Well, I want you to, remember I've told you so often that when we prayerfully are taken or transfigured before we see death, I believe we will be. I don't believe there's that much time left in the universe. But the state that we will find ourselves in, there will be an instant when there will be a brief kind of memory whereby you will remember the world and time and space and your experiences, and it will just be a brief instant. You will then enter into a state of being in which there is nothing but ecstasy, joy, peace. And that state of being, that's why, I've tried to describe it. Because I've had the pleasure of spending extended periods of time there twice. It's indescribable. It's a state of being in which it's not that you can't, it's not that you're unable to communicate what it's like, it's that you, by definition, cannot communicate it, because it can only have the component of common experience. Now, let's get back to language. Do you understand that each sentence has to have a subject and a verb and a predicate? Otherwise it wouldn't be a sentence, right?
Hmm? If this is subject and a verb, I'm going to put it in part.
Well, the predicate, if it isn't there, it's implied. What?
I forget what a predicate is. Subject comes after.
Yeah. It's what the verb
is.
He's so
right
lucky.
Bring
it
down there
a little.
Let me write that down.
It's junk
that comes
down.
Yeah.
Okay. Grass is green. Okay? Grass is the subject. Is the verb. Green is the predicate.
Boy, that's amazing.
Okay. Now, naming the same thing differently identifies it. Now, this is really basic, so listen to me very carefully. Naming the same thing differently is what identifies it. The subject and predicate of a sentence, by definition, by
grass and green.
Yeah. They have to name the same thing differently, or it wouldn't be a sentence.
Oh.
Unless they name the same, there is no unity. I.e., you can't say
grass is
huh?
Grass has to be the place where they meet.
Right. You can't say grass is air or grass is car. There's no unity, therefore there's no sentence. But you also can't say, you can if you're kidding, but the subject and the predicate don't name the same thing the same. Otherwise it would be stupid.
Grass.
Unless they name it differently, there's no thought.
But what?
I.e., to use that example, grass is grass. I mean, you say that not as a sentence, you say it as an idiom. It's an idiomatic expression. You understand me?
Yeah.
It has to, the subject and the predicate have to name the same thing differently. Now this is common of all language.
Yeah.
We're getting into artistry, right? Word artistry as opposed to painting artistry.
It's like green grass or grass green.
Now, can you see where we're going?
Sure, even in the sentence like the dog gets hit by the car. I mean, that's where they have come together, you know. The dog gets hit by the car,
it names the same thing differently. It's still, the subject of the sentence is the dog, but now you're naming a different state of being for that dog. He got hit by the car. Now, even negation, which we'll find out there's no such thing later, but the negative words don't exist.
Like no and not?
Right. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as a negative in time and space. Anyway. So, please, I'd like, if you can, before we meet the next time, which is when? Next Monday? Get Harry to make you a copy or listen to, or get out of the library or something. Listen to it together. Listen to a tape called The Concept of Zero. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Now, hear me. This, we're going to get deeper than we've ever dreamed of being. Names are divided into three realms. There are independent names, i.e. physical things. Lamp, wall. They're independent, therefore they can have a name independent of anything else. You understand? Jackie, cup, Bible, Oli, light. Those are independent names. By definition, an independent name is a physical name. Okay? There are psychological names. Love. Happiness.
Hungry.
Thirsty. Okay? Those states of being are depend on the response of the mind to that word. They don't have an independent identity. So they are, by definition, words that exist in the realm of the soul. Okay. Can't point to hunger.
Look, here's hunger.
But you can point to a cup. Okay. Now, there's another realm of names called associational names. And they only have meaning in relationship to something else. Now, can you give me an example?
Colors.
Huh?
Colors.
Height.
Bigger, smaller,
better,
height,
more spiritual.
Okay. They are by definition associational names. Mm-hmm. By definition, associational names are spiritual. So you've got physical names, lamp, microphone, Louis. You've got psychological names, hunger, thirst, love. You've got associational names, blue, green,
idiot,
stupid.
I'm not clear on the difference between the second and the third. How is green different than hunger?
Because your state of being can't be in a condition of green.
Does
that mean
you're
you?
See, I was having a hard time differentiating.
Wait a minute, I thought you said, but yeah, but that isn't the rule you just established.
Psychological.
Yeah,
you said the second state of names is dependent upon the mind's reaction to it.
Well, or it's green, just dependent on the mind, psychological.
Isn't green dependent on?
No, it's dependent on your definition.
If the stimulus is green, you and I won't think of the same color.
No, well, some names can exist in partially in both realms. Green isn't a good example, but
okay,
height.
Well, I'm not trying.
Or smaller, or bigger.
I'm not trying to show I'm smart. I don't see what the third category is.
The third category is associational. It only has relationship
among
things. Higher, lower, heavier.
It's the opposite.
No. Higher, lower, it could be a thousand things. It's
like
a million.
You don't have an emotional
or fifth.
Numbers, all numbers. Fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, tenth, a million. It's an associational name. But trust me on it for a minute. You can think about the implications of it. The three realms of names have to be physical, which is body, psychological, which is soul, and spiritual, which are associational.
Hmm.
Why is association spiritual? It's the only one you can get back to unity on.
It's the only one.
I'm lost.
That's how a group of
I'm trying to
totally
answer,
weird
I have
25
people answering the question. I'm sorry, but I can't go on. I'm lost. I don't understand the third category.
Associational?
Yeah. I understand the first two.
Okay, you understand physical.
Yes.
We're just talking about names now. Things that we name things. Okay. You understand? Everybody understand physical names.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be able to exist independently.
Mm-hmm.
You got that? Does anybody have any doubt about physical names? Earth, sun, lamp. Okay? Now, you all understand psychological names. They define a condition that's of the mind.
Hungry,
tired, sick.
Even words like freedom.
Freedom.
Guilty.
All of those are psychological terms and define the state of the mind, the soul.
So they're all response.
No.
Freedom.
Huh?
Freedom isn't a response, for instance.
No. We there. If you went through a dictionary, And in fact, this would be a good exercise. I did it. But I didn't write them down, unfortunately, right now, because I thought it would be so obvious I wouldn't have to talk about it. You can see that all names in that dictionary are either independent names, therefore they're physical names. They are psychological names because they describe psychological conditions, or they're associational names. Their existence depends on two or more objects.
It's like with physical, when you hear physical names, you can get an image of that thing in your mind. Lamp, Harry, odor. When you hear, what's the second one?
Psychological.
You can get a feeling for what it is. You can get a, well, but it doesn't happen, but you can get a sense.
You can sense it.
Not necessarily a thing, but with associational, it's dependent on other people's...
Or other things.
Yeah.
If I say to you, taller, you'll have to say to me, taller than what? Mm-hmm. If I say to you, I got a mental block. Taller is a good meaning, or height. Well, height compared to what? Or eight. Weight.
If you say eight, you'll see eight. Seven things and then one more.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They're all associated, their existence is dependent upon their association with others' things. That's all I'm saying.
They can't seem like older or younger.
Older, yeah. Younger.
They can't stand on their own.
Like.
Yeah.
Okay, older or younger what?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, older doesn't mean anything unless there is a younger.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean anything unless there's something to associate
it
with.
Yeah.
Taller doesn't mean anything unless you have something to associate it with. But water is independent.
Green.
Something has to be green. It's a state of a thing, but it requires something else to look at or
like
to make
red, compared to red, not green.
Okay,
so.
Now I'm up to where red is, which is why is that spiritual?
It's spiritual because it's not independent. It's spiritual by definition. It's not independent and it's not dependent on you. Psychologically,
it's not a physical thing.
It's not a physical thing. It's not a mental thing. And not mental
all
in terms
of skirt.
Right. But I can go into a long other discussion about why it's spiritual, but we probably will do that later. I wish I'd have done this thing. I had all these. I went through the dictionary and just listed all of the. But I threw it away. Okay, anyway, please, do you at least have enough understanding that you can accept the possibility that all names exist in one of those three realms?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You, are you okay in that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's set that aside a minute. Listen to me now. A name of anything is a sound. You got that?
Okay.
Jackie is a sound. And the naming of the names, the little marks you make in the paper for the that indicate that sound are really a secondary phenomenon. All naming had to do with speech and sound.
Yeah.
Okay? So the naming of something is a sound. And the sound is a vibration of a particular order, of a particular type, of a particular frequency, of a particular pitch. It's a unique vibration. That's why when we talked about you cannot think without your vocal cords moving. Because your being knows that the name is a sound and the sound is a vibration. Can you buy that? Okay. All three are exactly the same. The name, the sound, and the vibration are all one. They can't exist independent of each other. The name, the sound, and the vibration. Name, sound, vibration. They all exist at the same time, even in thought, because of what we've proven, and they exist in the same point, in the same place, at the same time, as the same thing. Okay. The spiritual, the mental, and the physical, the independent, the psychological, and associational, they are not similar, but the same thing, related differently. Huh? This is why, the reason you can't follow this is the reason that the world cannot understand the Trinity.
Father, Son, Spirit.
It's exactly the same. Thought, word, and deed, Father, Son, Spirit, sound, name, sound, vibration.
I'm with you on that. What about physical?
That they may be one as we are one.
Or independent. Well, the three types of words.
Independent, psychological,
Spirit.
Association.
I'm not seeing.
Okay, well, this. How can I say this? The three names of words that describe three realms, every one of the words or the names, no matter which what realm they exist in, are at the same time spiritual, physical, or spiritual, physical, and spirit. Body, soul, and spirit. Every word, even in the three different realms, is spirit.
Every single word is a parable.
Therefore, every single vibration that you have placed a name on that has a sound is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Your effect, though, of naming them is simply the Antichrist's desire to be above God.
You go on. I understand that the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. The last part that you said.
The Father is the.
Okay, Father, Son, Spirit, okay, you say sound, the vocal, and the thought, okay? The three?
Yeah, those three, I'm not getting it, maybe it's getting too technical.
What is the Father? The Father is the speak?
Father is the name.
The name.
The Son is the what?
The sound.
The thing, okay. And the Spirit is the result, the end.
The vibration.
The
infinite, the invisible, active matter which causes the thing to come into being.
Oh, I understand that.
Let me show you something. Let me show you. Go to, everybody get a Bible. Go to Colossians. Colossians 1, verse 9. For this cause we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you, and to desire that you might be filled with the knowledge of His will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all might according to His glorious power unto all patience and long-suffering with joyfulness, giving thanks unto the Father which hath made us meet to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light. Now, right now Harry thinks he's made them to be hamburger, but meat there means He's given us whatever is necessary. Who hath delivered us from the power of darkness. Now, I'm telling you that the power of darkness is words, names. He hath delivered us from the power of darkness. Now, all I'm doing by this course of study is trying to cause you to see the end of names. of sentences. So that they, by his knowledge in you, can be redeemed. So that you can be aware of and no longer subject to the manipulation of other people.
Yeah.
Because everyone is lying as a serpent in the grass, trying to entice you away from this knowledge. All things in the universe are against what we're about. All words in the universe are against what we're about. Okay, the promise here is that he has delivered us from the power of darkness and hath translated us, past tense, into the kingdom of his dear son. Okay, now there's going to be some words about this kingdom. In whom we have redemption through his blood. Now all we're learning here is more deeply what redemption means. And the forgiveness of sins. And we're seeing sin more and more and more. We're seeing we can't open our mouth without sinning, without manipulating, without crucifying the Son of God afresh. You understand that? Now, listen to this next part. Talking about Christ, who is the image of the invisible God. What the hell does that mean? The firstborn of every creature. My God, what does that mean? For by him were all things created, that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him. Now what the hell does that mean? I'm trying to tell you what that means. All things were created by him and for him. That's not a religious term. You will never see that it's finished unless you see that right now every knee is bowing and every tongue is confessing that Jesus Christ is Lord. Not someday. It will hear, it will sound, if you listen to the, you know about bond slaves? Well, you know that you heard they had to have a hole in their ear. You know why they got the hole in the ear? Because they were nailed to the doorpost of the master's house by the ear. So that they can hear. That's what obey means. That you would obey the master. That the ear would be circumcised. Now, you cannot hear what the Spirit is saying to the churches if you're hearing what the Gentile world is hearing. God is saying the same word. The world, everything in the world is saying one thing. Because all things were created by him and exist for him. Therefore, there is no word that can come out of someone's mouth. There's no music that can come out of someone's instrument. There's no life, there's no speech, nothing that can come forth that isn't declaring him. But you can't hear. Why? Because you're hearing with the mind of a Gentile. You're hearing the words of the Gentiles. Because you've been passed through the fires of Molech so that you cannot hear. You're cast aside. You're thrown about by every wind and wave of doctrine. You're thrown about by your emotions. But I'm here to tell you tonight that if you have ears to hear, you will see that every word reveals the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. Not your attempt to have dominion over it. I want to create in you a hunger to speak in tongues, because that's the only way that your mind can be tricked. Short-circuited. I speak in tongues more than that's all I do when I'm alone. I couldn't imagine sitting around thinking about stuff. The reason I speak in tongues is because I saw a long, long time ago the vanity of this language. And to think in that language that I have seen as obscenity upon obscenity, as manipulation upon manipulation, would be for me the abject stupidity of the world. I've seen the end of language. Paul said he thanked God that he spoke in tongues more than any man. Well, I can say the same thing. I don't teach it because I want you to have the hunger for it when you see that all other tongues are fruitless. I don't give a shit about your little fears about charismatic stuff. I don't want to hear it. I don't care about your little Molech, what your parents did to you about charismatic people. I don't care whether you agree with Criswell that speaking in tongues was for another dispensation. I don't want any of you to talk to me about your little fears. I don't care about your little fears. I care that you would see the vanity of everything you've done to date and cry out to the Father for relief by His Spirit. Not by might nor by power, but by my Spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. I want to create in you a hunger for the Spirit of God. That's the only thing that can motivate you. And the only way I know to create a hunger is by showing you the stupidity of everything else. The only way you're going to get relief from your emotional treadmills is by being overpowered with another stimulus. God doesn't give a shit about your little games and your little stuff. He cares about you being apprehended. How can you be apprehended when you have the mind of the Gentile? When you worship the same thing the Gentiles worship? When your idolatry is so rampant that your very words are graven images upon that temple? In whom, by him, were all things created that are in heaven, that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him, and he is before all things, and by him all things exist. When it says all things, it doesn't leave anything out. The only thing that's wrong is your mind, because you're led astray. Well, let's go on. And he is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he might have the preeminence. For it pleased the Father that in him should all fullness dwell. And having made peace through the blood of his cross, by him to reconcile all things unto himself. By him I say, whether they be things in earth or things in heaven. And you, that were sometime alienated and enemies in your mind by your words or by your wicked works, yet now hath he reconciled in the body of his flesh through death to present you holy and unblameable and unreprovable in his sight. If you continue in the faith, grounded and settled, be not moved away from the hope of the gospel which you have heard, and which was already preached to every creature which is under heaven, whereof I, Paul, am made a minister, who now rejoice in my sufferings for you, and fill up that which is behind or lacking of the afflictions of Christ in my flesh for his body's sake, which is the church. Whereof I am made a minister according to the dispensation of God which is given to me for you to fulfill the word of God, even the mystery which hath been hid from ages and from generations, but now is made manifest to his saints, to whom God would make known what is the riches of the glory of this mystery among the Gentiles, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory, whom we preach, warning every man and teaching every man in all wisdom, that we may present every man perfect in Christ Jesus. Whereunto I also labor, striving according to his working, which worketh in me mightily. Your mind is the only enemy. And the armament of your mind is your words, your names. Leave you in this state. only way to capture the mystery. It's not by using the words that are the enemies of the mystery. The way to be captured by the mystery is by repenting from dead works. That you may be apprehended totally. Amen? Every time I preach, I risk that half of you will go commit suicide. He'll never leave you nor forsake you. Your mind tells you that it's a lie every second of the day. Now somebody's wrong. Now we're delving into things that may have never been delved into before. I don't know. Doesn't matter whether they have or not. It's what's before us. And we will be accounted faithful in these matters.
I just want to add one thing to this. It's like you were talking the other day that a word couldn't be itself. You know, the word didn't name itself. And then go back to the computer thing. The most powerful languages now, computer languages, are languages, formally in computer languages, the names, the symbol names, or the value names, are separate from the values. Artificial intelligence, the most powerful languages of all now, is where the name is itself,
yeah.
The thing. And I know most of them, that'll make sense later on, but it's like you can see that, it's like, you can see that it's the best sorcery of all, if, I mean, if that's what you're into, because you can get a machine to do it. It can teach itself the names, and teach itself to manipulate itself, it can even teach itself more names.
I promise you that the computer technology has to move toward one weird thing that's so weird it's almost, because they've about reached the capacity of minerals for memory. I mean, they've gone as far as they have to come to living material for memory. And when they get down to it, the thing that they will end up being able to and manipulate the living material for memory will be brain cells.
They're the
perfect computer chip. Because of an interesting phenomenon. The cliche is, you've always heard all your life, that, well, you only use 10% of your brain. The reason you only use 10% is that every single time you think a new thought, the protein content of that neuron increases. And it's the protein content that determines your capacity to think a new thought. Therefore, you're always at the you're always at the upswing of the logarithmic cycle. That's why, from the standpoint of a computer manufacturer, the more you used it, the more capacity it would have. So it'd be an infinite memory.
Yeah.
Well, that's this. But hear me, every name, unless you have, it's been redeemed by the blood of Christ, which is manifested in you by the circumcision of the ear, which means you're nailed to that doorpost, every name in this bank of computers is simply a graven image on the wall of your temple, and it's in violation of the second commandment. Now God can redeem them. I don't know why God has chosen us to get into this stuff. I mean, this is big, big, heavy duty. I mean, this makes everything else seem, you know,
I mean, the key is this for me is just seeing that, you know, like response, people's response to me, or, you know, faith in the medical stuff. being able to see it actually is what it is, you know, that the language is just this thing, and that, you know, there's no truth in it. There's no validity to response. It's just those things that you learn to pay attention to. It doesn't need to be paying attention to.
But eat more protein, you know, next. Have another burger.
Take a big guy.
Beans and rice.
No, you don't want to eat beans.
Let me do it.